Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Baseball Talk on 93.7 The Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series, Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he has built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus. Donnie Football on this Football Friday. Joe Starkey back in Buffalo with his family this weekend. Austin Bechtold is behind the glass. Less than an hour until the PM team will have a Football Friday. Andrew, Chris, they are ready to go with Charlie Borges on this Friday afternoon. Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We go back out to that Fan Hotline, and that is where we find Bob Walk, former Pirates pitcher, current Pirates analyst. Bob, six consecutive losses for the Buccos after sweeping the LA Dodgers. It just seems very 2025 of the Pirates to do this. They sweep the Los Angeles Dodgers. They then lose their next three to Milwaukee at home, and then they go to Baltimore and get swept. What have you seen in this funk where, you know, the offense can't really get going?
Well, really the same thing we've seen for about 2 years now. That's just what we've talked about this all, you know, the Baltimore thing, that reminds me a little bit of first road trip of the year where, you know, we just those low scoring 1-1 losses, but we've had so many of those for so long now. And what really I think is the result of that, and you know, I saw it again today. You see quotes in the clips of paper and saying, you know, we need to do better running the bases. You know, situational hitting with runners in scoring position. You know, hitting the ball the other way. You know, we've pretty much been talking about this for 2 years. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but I think that's pretty much what we talk about. And the reason you kind of see these like little things about base running and stuff like that is because we have so many low scoring 1-run losses. If we're not losing, if we're winning 5-2, 4-2 instead of losing 2-1, then all this stuff kind of gets covered up a little bit. Because every team is not perfect, but when you have to play perfect baseball to win games, even when you're getting pretty extraordinary starting pitching, you see somebody makes a base running mistake or something, and it's like, well, it sticks out like a sore thumb. Where the simple answer is, we don't score enough runs, period. Our offense, you look at the numbers of, you know, I don't care what, if you look at new school numbers, old school numbers, whatever you want to look at, they're not good. You know, I talked to Starkey about this last week. He asked me at the end of the show, he says, you know, what position would you really, look at next year, you know, to try and change if you had to look at for like the wintertime, what position? I said, who cares what position? We need hitters. I don't care if they play catcher, center field, second base, third base. What difference does it make? We need to score runs. And we're in the same situation, in Baltimore. We could not get any kind of offense going whatsoever. And I realize now it's September and, you know, wins should be secondary and you're trying to, you know, figure out there's some guys on this team, some young guys that you have to make a decision about when the season's over. Are we bringing this guy back or not? And so you're having to look at these guys and say, are they part of the solution for next year or not, and make some decisions on them. Well, the only way you can do that is if you give them a lot of playing time. And sometimes giving them a lot of playing time is, you know, not good for the trying to win the ball game. But really, when it comes right down to it, we haven't scored runs all year, so who cares who you put in the lineup?
Yeah, I remember your comment to Joe last week, and I agreed with everything you said when it was, I don't care what position the guy plays, we just need hitters. Do you think that, you know, the front office sees long stretches of really bad offensive outputs and thinks that same way? Like, hey, we really need to improve this offense going into 2026, because here are just stretches upon stretches of games where we are scoring under three runs and we're giving our teams very little chance to win.
Well, yeah, I think that's got to be obvious. I mean, I don't see how they couldn't see that. That's everybody sees it. I'm stating the obvious here. So, yeah, you know what you need to do. Doing it is something different. When this season started, you had Cruz making some strides last year. If you go back and look at his, I think his last 4 months of the season, I mean, he was tearing apart left-handed pitching. I mean, just he was one of the better hitters in the league against left-handers. The whole last two-thirds, last half for sure. And then so you could kind of, I think, pencil him in for a big year this year. I mean, he's got, you know, we've been talking about it for a long time now, and it's, you know, it's not showing up. We've been talking about his baseball athleticism and everything he does. He should be a superstar. And, you know, right now he's kind of struggling to stay in the lineup every day. You know, you look at what his numbers are. And so that one thing right there, there's a bunch of other stuff, but, you know, if you ask me, one thing right there that to hurt the offense this year, that was somebody that I'm sure they were counting on to put up some really nice offensive numbers this year, and you're just not seeing it. First half of the season, a couple of streaks here and there. We were hoping he would catch fire after the All-Star break, but it's not going on right now. And so when the guys you're counting on to come through for you, you know, don't, and you have limited resources about, you know, as far as what are you going to, who are you going to bring in? And when the offensive guys you already have don't click, then, you know, you're going to have a year like this. And that's kind of what's happened. Now, I'm sure that they're going to try and put their limited resources toward offense this off season. And, you know, you just hope that they don't miss and they get some guys that can, get in the middle of that lineup. I mean, you'd love to see, like, what would our record be if you had some guys in the lineup right now, somebody, you know, pushing toward 100 RBIs and the guy either in front of them or behind them, sitting at about 80. I got to believe that our starting pitching would have a lot more wins right now than they do. And so that's what that would be your goal for next year. Now, getting that done, you know, I don't know the answers to that. I don't know how you come up with those guys, but that's what we need.
Yeah, Bob, when it comes to O'Neill Cruz, it's hard to not look at this season as a disappointment. I mean, it started out hot. It started out looking like, okay, we're finally seeing the arrival of O'Neill Cruz, and then it hit a wall and it fell flat. It seems like he's been stuck at pretty much the same numbers for quite some time, and, you know, the batting average is right around the Mendoza line. I know that's like an old-school stat at this point, but the OPS 682, the OPS plus is 90, so he's less than an average player at the plate. It just feels like another disappointing season for a guy who is already 26.
Yeah, I agree with everything you say. Last year I thought he turned a corner, because the main thing was if he could hit left-handers, then the strikeouts were going to start going away. I mean, obviously, the guy, when he's right, like we've seen a few stretches earlier this year we were talking about, he puts fear in the infielders. You don't want to be in the infield when he's hitting, when he's right. Because, I mean, he's going to – the guy can hit balls harder than anybody else in baseball. But getting that ball put in play is a challenge for him, and especially now against lefties. I don't know what happened. Something happened to him over the offseason where he went to where he was – not only doing fine against lefties, but really feasting on left-handed hitting or pitchers, and now he literally is no better than an old National League pitcher when there's a lefty on the mound. you know, as far as hitting. So, you know, I don't, you know, and he's not the only guy. You can't just, you know, throw shade on him. But, I point him out because big things were expected of him, and it just didn't happen. So there's one thing that maybe there's still to come. I don't know. I mean, you know, this thing about hitting lefties that I keep talking about, it was like a switch was thrown and he couldn't hit them anymore. And, well, originally, you go back far enough, there was a switch thrown where all of a sudden he could hit them. That was a big question mark. Is he ever going to hit lefties? And then he did something and he started, you know, ripping them apart. And now another switch was thrown and then he's back to where he can't hardly put them in play anymore. So I don't know, but that's just him. There's, you know, there's some, you know, other things that need to be attended to. But, you know, when it comes right, boils right down to the very end, we need better hitters, and they have to be some middle of the lineup guys, not just, you know, guys that are going to spray the ball around.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Two of the Pirates' best players are two of their oldest players, Bob. Andrew McCutchen, Tommy Pham. Would you expect either of those two guys to be back for 2026?
Well, yeah, if they want to. You know, I, you know, once you get up to a certain age, I know, like, you know, Kutch, I don't know, you know, how many years he wants to play. But, yeah, I mean, they're probably not the answer, although if Pham hits for an entire season like he did the last couple months this year, then heck yeah, you definitely want that offense back. And he played a pretty good left field to boot. I like him on defense a lot. I think he was a plus out there in our big outfield. But, I mean, he's getting older, and at some point, you know, something happens to the older player and they start going downhill rather quickly. You know, it's a big gamble to put a lot of your resources into somebody like that. And then, you know, your timing is bad. And now they have that year where they start to deteriorate. But I would not mind, you know, having either one of them back for sure. Cause they're probably not middle of the lineup, you know, big RBI guys at this age, but, they're still certainly, you know, can be considered two of our better hitters right now. So, you know, especially if you don't have anything that can replace them. Like, if you don't bring them back, who else are you going to put out there? You know, you got to answer that question too. So, yeah, I think the way that they've played this year, they deserve, you know, to continue if, you know, I think if they want to. But you have to, you know, look at, okay, how much money is it going to cost you? Do they realize that it might not be everyday playing time? You know, little things like that have to be discussed with them. But yeah, I think they both showed that they're very good major league hitters still at their advanced age.
You can follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan. That's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Talking to Pirates broadcaster Bob Walk, the former Pirates pitcher here on 93.7 The Fan, his weekly visit. Bob, have you noticed anything that Connor Griffin is doing? I know he's still a couple of levels away from the majors, but it's sometimes hard to avoid the big numbers that this kid is putting up. And a lot of people think this time next year, maybe even earlier than a year from now, Connor Griffin is in the major leagues.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. The way we are right now, you know, in the past, a year back when I was a young man, you know, it wasn't unusual for somebody with unusual talents to make it to the, you know, big leagues very quickly, you know, like say a Robin Yount type guy. And there's others. It takes a very talented and a very strong individual mentally, but, you know, maybe he's that guy. So, you know, heck, I could see him, you know, as bad as we need offense, if he's going to be part of the answer next year, maybe being up, fairly soon. You know, maybe not out of spring training, but maybe in a hurry. And, of course, that also, I think, depends on what kind of moves that they can make and what they can bring in the offseason will probably have a little effect on his timetable also.
Bob, I feel like we have this conversation often. I asked you the question last week about best Pirates pitchers that you've seen stacked up against Paul Skenes. I mean, it's just comical, some of the stuff he's able to do. The WAR is 7.3. His ERA is 1.92 in 30 starts. He has 203 strikeouts on the season. I think the scariest thing, Bob, about Paul Skenes is how easy he makes it all look.
Yeah, he's just a one-of-a-kind individual. I mean, you can put whatever kind of adjectives you want on what he's doing. It's pretty awesome stuff. I almost wish that, it was like 30 years ago because I think, if he was allowed to go out there and pitch like, say, guys did back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, he might have a 300 strikeout year, something like that. I mean, he would even be putting up more eye-popping numbers than he is nowadays. He's just because of the way baseball is, and the way they handle pitchers and players nowadays. He probably is not allowed to stay out there. Well, we know he's not allowed to stay out there very long, and that kind of holds some of those individual totals down a little bit from what he would probably achieve if he was just allowed to go out there and let's just see, if you can throw 250 innings like say a Steve Carlton or somebody like that.
It was a shorter start the other night for Skenes, but still a very good one. He had 8 strikeouts and did not allow a run against the Orioles in that middle game loss in Baltimore. Should we expect kind of that same thing the rest of the way where they're not pushing Skenes, into the 8th or 9th inning of games unless something truly historic is taking place?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's been obvious. They've been being pretty careful with him really all year. So he only can do what he's asked to do or what he's allowed to do, and that's about it. So he goes out there and goes 5 or 6 innings, sometimes 7. Depending on where his pitch count is lying. And then when he comes out of the game, except for a very rare occasion, we should be ahead if we could ever, score him not a lot of runs. Sometimes just a couple of runs would do. But yeah, he's incredible. We are so lucky to be able to watch him go out there and pitch every 5 days because this type of guy very seldom comes around.
Bob Walk, former Pirates pitcher, current Pirates analyst. Bob, are you out in D.C. this weekend, or do you have the weekend off?
No, I'm in my living room having a roast beef sandwich.
Oh, that sounds phenomenal. That sounds phenomenal, Bob. Well, thanks for hopping on, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, Donnie, take care of yourself.
There we go, Bob Walk. Man, that sounds really nice, just sitting in the living room. Roast beef sandwich. How you feel about that one, Austin?
Yeah, I could go for a sandwich right now, Donnie. I could go for something to eat.
You a roast beef guy or no?
I'm okay with roast beef. I like ham sandwiches. Those are good. Or
yeah,
turkey.
Ham, turkey,
some cheese.
You can't go wrong. But yeah, I mean, you throw some roast beef on there. That could be a bit of a game changer.
I don't eat enough sandwiches.
That used to be like the go-to, I feel. Like growing up, like you're taking your lunch to school or something, or you just had like summertime go home sandwich. There were few better feelings than when I was a kid settling in for a Saturday slate of college football. My dad's in his recliner. I'm just on the couch getting ready for basically 12 hours of straight football.
Oh, yeah.
And you either have some fresh deli meat ready to go, or you even get like a local like high school band hoagie. Oh,
those band hoagies.
Good stuff.
Very, very good things to be able to eat.
Yeah, we used to go the Hemfield band. They were always the ones that made the hoagies out in Westmoreland County, and those would be big hitters.
No Greensburg-Salem band hoagies.
No, Greensburg-Salem, wow. I feel like, didn't really do the hoagie thing. I mean, maybe they just felt as if Hemfield had it so down pat. And I don't even know if there was anything special about what they did. They were, I don't know, they just hit different on a Saturday afternoon.
Well, credit those Hemfield hoagies, they're done.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Join Mulsey, this guy's everywhere, tomorrow at Rally House on General Robinson Street, North Shore, from 10 until noon. Get some pit gear before the brawl. Get your black and gold gear for the home opener on Sunday and register for your chance to win $250 in Rally House gift cards. Donnie Football with you on 93.7 The Fan for about, oh, not quite 20 more minutes because the break will take us into 2 p.m. The guys in the afternoon, Mulsey and Pony, they are ready to go for a Football Friday. We are about a dozen minutes away from the 50-minute mark on The Fan, which is brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram on Route 19 in Peters Township. And What's Cooking, brought to you by your local Geico rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Very kindly. And it is time for our picks. Austin, now Joe is out. I don't know if you communicated with him. I assume we don't have his picks yet. Maybe
we do not. Get them, I will get his picks.
Yeah, by tomorrow, since there will be a couple of college games into the mix here. So what, 8 games, Austin, and you can give the rundown of what the records are so far.
Yeah, so Donnie, last week you went 5-3.
Oh, nice week.
Bounce
nice
back week for Donnie. You are now 6-10. But Joe had a better week. Joe went 6-2.
No!
Joe, he's now 7-9. I'm sure he's smiling somewhere. I went 3-5. I was awful. I'm now 6-10. I'm tied with you.
Okay.
Going into this week.
Basically all even.
Let's start off with some college games. Number 18, South Florida, one of the big surprises of the year. They're at number 5, Miami. The line is 17.5 in favor of the Hurricanes.
Oh, man. That feels a little steep to give South Florida that much. I feel like they can keep it within that. I mean, I don't think they're going to win, but I think they can lose by like 2 touchdowns. So I will take USF against Carson Beck's Hurricanes on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm with you, Donnie. I don't think that USF is going to pull off an upset. If they do, they're going to be ranked the top 10 team in the country. Miami is going to end up winning this game. They got a good chance to make the playoff, but USF will not have Miami cover. Number 16, Texas A&M is at number 8, Notre Dame. Notre Dame is 0-1 on the season. They had a bye last week, and now they get to play their first home game.
That's a very odd spot to have a bye week. What'd you say the line was again?
6.5, Notre Dame.
I will go with the Irish. They had the loss against Miami in a spot where, I mean, I picked Notre Dame to win. I thought they would win the game outright against the U in that first big weekend of the college football season. That didn't happen. They come back home. They have their feet under them a little bit. I will take Notre Dame to win the game and cover.
That's one of the games that I got right in picking against Notre Dame last week or 2 weeks ago. I think ultimately Notre Dame will win at home, but it does worry me that A&M might end up making this a field goal game. Notre Dame will bounce back and win their first game of the year. Crazy that the 8th team in the country has not won a game through 2 weeks. Villanova at number 2, Penn State. The line is now 48.5, Donnie. Penn State has not covered in the last 2 weeks. I'm going to pick them this week again. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just stupid. That might be the case. But I'm going to pick them to blow out Villanova because I feel like James Franklin just wants to absolutely lay the lumber on some team because, I mean, they have not played that well. They've not played like a number 2 team in the country, I guess we should say. Over the first 2 weeks of the season, I think they'll win it by 50.
Now, here's my question, Austin. Is Penn State repaying the favor to Villanova, and are they playing in basketball? That should have been the deal done here. Like, hey, you know, we'll play you in football. We'll take our lumps. You guys can beat us for 60 minutes, but we want to play hoops.
Pitt basketball is playing against Penn State this year. How about that? In Central
I know,
PA?
That's pretty cool. I mean,
so football is the only sport that they won't play against each other.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Villanova, their end of the deal, they should have gotten Penn State in basketball because that would look like a win on their schedule. Man, I mean, they have let me down a little bit the first two games because it's not even as if they haven't covered. They weren't even really close to it last week because it was in somewhere in the mid-40s last week, I believe, against FIU.
Yeah, 42.5.
And they basically sleptwalked the whole way through the first half. They were only up 10-0. They never really had a prayer to cover. I'm going to take Villanova to not lose by 50 in this game. Penn State will destroy them, but they won't destroy them by 50-plus.
Yeah, that's probably the smart pick. Pitt, 7.5-point favorites at West Virginia, Donnie. 7.5 is a big number.
Yeah, I like WVU here to cover. I think this will be a much tougher game than we are anticipating. Listen, I would love to see Pitt go in there and blow them out. I would love to see a 34-7 win, something of a statement made by Pat Narduzzi and his boys. I just think that a game like this, it really is one where the records don't matter. It's early in the season. West Virginia was embarrassed last week by Ohio. And I do believe that this game means a ton to Rich Rodriguez. His legacy in West Virginia, so many people think of that 13-9 game, and they think of this guy was the coach that blew it against a bad Pitt team in the backyard brawl with a chance to play in the national title game at stake. I don't think West Virginia will win the game outright, but I think they keep it close. Give me the Mountaineers plus 7.5.
I don't think West Virginia will ultimately win either. It wouldn't stun me if they ultimately do, being at home. 3:30 game time, I don't think, favors the Mountaineers. If this is a night game at Milan Puskar Stadium, I'd feel better about WVU's chances of winning it. But yeah, after the embarrassing loss to Ohio, Rich Rod, I think, just needs to be able to show face a little bit. Like, look, obviously the expectations coming back are not that West Virginia is going to become the ultimate power that it was under Rich Rod before. It's going to take some time, especially in an NIL transfer portal era. But I do think that they keep this a touchdown game, maybe even a field goal game West Virginia will cover. Eagles are 1.5-point favorites at the Chiefs, Donnie.
So this is very close to a pick'em. We asked Nick Kostos about this game when he was on around noon. And if you want the skinny on really any of these NFL games this weekend, go back and listen to that on your Odyssey app. I'm going to go with Philly here. I know it's very tough to ever bet against Patrick Mahomes as an underdog at home, which has not happened much in his career, especially when he really came onto the scene. I just think Philly is the team that in a real pick'em-like game here is the better one. I will go with the Eagles minus the 1.5 at KC. It will also get people dancing on the graves, probably prematurely, of the Chiefs after Sunday.
As much as I'd like to see the Chiefs lose this game, I don't think that they will at home. There's something about playing the team that beat you in the Super Bowl the next year, which I don't think has happened very often in the NFL world over the last 10 to 15 years, but when being the next season, when the Chiefs take the field and Travis Kelce is back out there and Taylor Swift is shown 13 times with a new diamond ring on her finger, I think the Chiefs will end up ultimately winning this game and they will not go to 0-2. There will not be a mass panic in Kansas City and trade for Tyreek Hill out of an abundance of panic. I think that the Chiefs ultimately win. Browns at Ravens. The Ravens are 11.5-point favorites, Donnie. Big number.
Yeah, before the Browns made some of the dumbest comments, really Grant Delpit making one of the dumbest comments I've ever seen from an NFL player yesterday, I felt really good, actually, about the Browns because of the number. I think I'm going to stick with them here, plus 11.5 in Baltimore. This is the first time we have seen Cowboy Joe Flacco go back to Baltimore since he left. And he certainly left on good terms. Yeah, he ended up getting benched for Lamar Jackson, but he went about it in a very professional manner. And I think the fans there will give him a nice reception, even though he's wearing a Browns uniform. The Ravens also have an odd tendency in some early season games to have a weird one where they either lose outright or play it very close against an inferior opponent. They did it last year against the Raiders and Gardner Minshew. I think it happens here. Cleveland plus 11.5 to keep it close.
The Ravens changed their app so that it looked like 1996, and they said, no, the app is not broken. We're celebrating 30 years of Ravens football, where, oh, yeah, Cleveland went to Baltimore, stole their franchise, and has beaten up on them like little brother for the last 30 years. I think the Ravens will bounce back, win big after the loss against the Bills. Jags are at the Bengals. 3.5 points is what Cincinnati is favored by here, Don.
Yeah, and I think Cincinnati will get them by about a touchdown in this game. I think Jacksonville is a playoff team because I think they will win the worst division in the AFC. I think Joe Burrow breaks out of that funk that he was in week one, and Cincy covers the 3.5 points.
7 yards. That's the number in the second half that Cincinnati had against the Browns. Look, I think the Bengals will ultimately win this game, but I do think that Jacksonville will keep it to a field goal. Surprise some people. I like Trevor Lawrence. Liam Cohen had a good debut against Carolina. Jags, give me them to not win it, but to cover. All right, Steelers, Seahawks. The number continues to shift. It's now at 2.5 in favor of the Steelers. Donnie, what's your pick?
Yeah, and if it's only a field goal they have to cover, I definitely like the Steelers in this game. I think they have the advantage at head coach, they have the advantage at quarterback, and it's not often that I feel the Steelers have a better offense than their opposition. The defense, I think, almost by default has to play better as well. I don't see a blowout here, but I think it is a 6-10 point win for Pittsburgh on Sunday. Give me the Steelers to cover the 2.5 points.
I think we're going to get another big scoring game. I have 28-24. The Steelers win it, Donnie. I'm still concerned about the Steeler defense. I do think that giving Aaron Rodgers his first game in Pittsburgh with DK Metcalf revenge game, those guys are going to go off. 100 yards for Metcalf, touchdown for DK Metcalf. It's a close game for a while, but the Steelers end up pulling it out in the fourth.
Nick Farrell, Ray Fittipaldo, Nate Breisinger, Nick Kostos, Bob Walk. Want to thank all of those guys for joining the conversation. Want to thank you for tuning in and joining the fun as well. Austin, great work behind the glass. Fan weather is brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Sunny today and a high of 81. The PM team is next. Donnie Football signing off on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.